Thanks for listening to A Long Time in Finance with Jonathan Ford and Neil Collins, in partnership with Briefcase News, the service that brings intelligent curation and analysis to your media monitoring. So it's one of those weeks, isn't it, Neil, that everyone's talking about high pay again?
Yeah, it comes up every now and then. But the interesting thing about the current position is that the amounts which the chief executives of several large UK companies could earn if they hit various targets are now measured not in seven figures, but eight.
Good grief.
I think this is a step beyond anything that we've seen before. So the opportunity for them to get what most people would describe as outrageously rich is presented and has caused controversy.
So who are we talking about here?
Well, there are three companies which are in the news. There is AstraZeneca, who want to pay their very successful chief executive, if he hits his targets, he'll get 18.7 million. That's not over his lifetime, that's in a single year. The other ones which are in the spotlight at the moment are Smith & Nephew, who've also got a non-UK chief executive. They want to be able to pay him nearly £12 million if he hits the right targets. And the other one that's been rumbling along is the London Stock Exchange, where the shareholders have balked at a package which is again in eight figures. So there's three major companies in the London Stock Exchange where this has become a hot topic again.
Well, it's interesting that high pay should be back in the news, because the other day saw the death of one of the most influential economists of the last half century, somebody you probably never heard of. Michael Jensen isn't a name to rank alongside Friedman or Hayek or even Black and Scholes. He never won a Nobel Prize for his work. But for years at Harvard Business School, his classes were packed out with the corporate leaders of the future. And in a series of papers, he did as much as any single thinker to shape modern financial capitalism, particularly as it's practiced in the Anglo-Saxon world. To his critics, he was Gordon Gekko with a doctorate.
The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed is good.
A man who encouraged stratospheric CEO pay and vulture capitalism. But to his admirers, he was a corrective to the lazy, bureaucratic management culture of the 1970s, who revived American capitalism by putting it on a strict health regime. So I think it's worth having a chat about Mr. Jensen and his ideas, and we're very pleased to be joined today by Peter Morris. Peter is an expert on private equity. You're a former junk bond analyst, among other things, aren't you?
It's all right. I'm proud of it.
Anyway, I think we should start by getting you to tell us a bit about Mr. Jensen and what he did and why his ideas were so important.
So Jensen was born, I think, in 1939. He studied in Chicago. He did some work in the area of quoted markets to begin with, but the time when he hit the big time, and the reason we're talking about him today, is he had this amazing 12-month period in 1989-1990. And the particular article we're talking about at the moment is one that was published in 1990 in the Harvard Business Review. It was co-authored with someone called Murphy, and the title kind of says it all, which is typical for Jensen. So the title was CEO Incentives, dash. It's not how much you pay, but how. That paper in 1990, you can think about it as the match that lit the fuse under the rocket that became CEO pay in the last 30 years.
Perhaps you can tell us a bit more about what problem he thought he was solving by paying chief executives more in the way he wanted to pay them, and what impact it had.
So the problem he thought he was solving was that, to quote him in that paper, he said, and remember, this is 1990, so people were paid less than they are today, but it's not like they were underpaid. So, quote, on average, corporate America pays its most important leaders like bureaucrats, end quote. So what Jensen was suggesting was that CEOs, their pay was not tied closely enough to performance. So he was basically suggesting they got a fixed amount of pay And because they didn't have enough upside, therefore they got lazy and complacent and didn't work as hard for the shareholders as they would do if they had more powerful incentives, as he would have put it.
This is something which people refer to in academic circles as the agency problem.
The thinking goes, a chief executive of a company is basically looking after other people's money, the shareholders. And because it's not his or her money that's at risk, and he or she can't get as rich as the shareholders can, he or she is not going to work as hard as they would do if it was their money. Agency cost is the technical term. An easier way to think about it is other people's money.
And in the 80s, there was a kind of famous example, a book which became very widely read called Barbarians at the Gate, which was about a large American company called RJR Nabisco. And that seemed, I think, the way it was presented to exemplify these sort of problems, in that the chief executive of RJR Nabisco, I mean, he may not have been paid as much as he would have liked, or Jensen thought he should have been paid, but he basically lived a very comfortable life. And the message of that book, I think, was that this was not the way to go. And this led to very large, sluggish companies which didn't achieve very much.
So Jensen would have said the problem wasn't how much he was paid, but how he was paid. And the way he was paid meant that he had no reason not to invest large amounts of the shareholders' money in this corporate air force, where allegedly he also used the air force to fly his dogs to golf tournaments. But I may be imagining that bit.
No, I think that's in the book. But, you know, the dogs needed to be looked after properly.
We're absolutely right. But how, when he talks about it's not how much, it's how, what was the how? What was the brilliant sort of how mechanism?
So the general principle was to move away from fixed pay and to move more towards a system where your fixed pay would be relatively low, but the way your pay would work would be if things worked really well. In other words, if the shareholders got really rich, then you could get really rich. The technical legal instrument that generally gets used to do that is what's called an option. So shareholder options. Neil may remember if management were being paid at all in options before all this came along, but I'm pretty confident in saying that they got paid more in options after Jensen than before Jensen.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. I mean, the whole thing has got much more complicated and sophisticated as a result of that. It's worth pointing out, I noticed that his classes at Harvard were hugely popular amongst the thrusting young would-be executives. Of course, you can see why, because it was the opportunity not just to get to the top of a largish company, but actually to make a huge amount of money.
Yeah, I think that's right. But also the interesting thing to me is that not that he sold it to executives. I can absolutely see why an executive would think this was a terrific scheme. But the fact that it was sold to the shareholders, that's the more interesting thing from my perspective.
I would guess a large part of it was because it appealed to the zeitgeist. I mean, this was the 80s and the 90s, so this was capitalism revived. I mean, remember how much everyone believed in the technicals of clever finance at the time? So think about all the other things that were going on in the 90s and the 2000s leading up to the GFC. There was a general disposition to believe in the clever ideas that were coming from people who were genuinely very clever, like Jensen.
One of the reasons why it was popular is because he was right. A lot of these businesses were run as if they were offshoots of the civil service. The executives at and near the top stayed for a long time. They weren't hugely rewarded, but it was a very comfortable life. The competitive pressures were rather modest by today's standards. And I think that anything which put a bomb under them was probably a good thing.
I would agree with that. If we want to get on to the topic of private equity
yeah,
and buyouts tie directly into that.
Well, that was his other paper, wasn't it? You've referred to the one about CEO pay, but then he followed it up. And not content with shaking the corporate world, he wrote another one, Eclipse of the Public Corporation, saying that quoted companies were a waste of time.
It was 6 months before the pay one. So Eclipse of the Public Corporation, private equity, by which I'm really talking about buyouts here, leverage buyouts, had sort of started in the late 70s. But when it really started to take off was after Jensen wrote his Eclipse of the Public Corporation, which was a little bit like getting the papal blessing from the academic world. So suddenly buyouts went from being slightly grubby to being academically super respectable.
He was basically arguing that it was a better form of ownership, wasn't he? He was saying you get rid of these problems that you have with companies like RJR Nabisco by taking them private.
Yeah, his view based on what's called agency theory or agency costs was the problem with a quoted company is you've got an individual, the CEO, who's looking after other people's money, the shareholders. Someone looking after other people's money is never going to take as much care as someone looking after their own money. So the reason Jensen was very excited was he thought that buyouts were this very elegant solution to the agency problem because it basically collapsed the gap between the CEO and the owners. So you take RJR Nabisco private, the company is now owned by a private equity fund, and the private equity fund themselves are running the company.
So Jensen does all this. He writes these papers. They have a huge impact in the sense that they totally catch the intellectual zeitgeist. And you look around and we live in a world which is very much feels like it was the corporate world is designed by Jensen. We've got a huge private equity sector, which is enormously leveraged. We've got chief executives like Pascal Sorio lining up for their 18-figure bonuses. And despite the bleating of professional complainers like himself, Neil, you know, the bandwagon rolls on. And yet, I think we should at this point say that Jensen himself begins to doubt this Frankenstein monster he's unleashed on the world as a particularly good thing, doesn't he? He has second thoughts.
He does, and I think it's hugely to his credit. So I'm not sure how often people as eminent in his world as Jensen have done this. So starting in 2002, Jensen wrote a series of papers for academic journals addressing the argument he himself had made about pay in 1990. So the titles of some of these papers will give you some idea of what's going on here. So 2002, he wrote a paper called, quote, Just Say No to Wall Street. Mm. And then the one that I always particularly enjoy is 2003 for a journal called European Financial Management. The title was, quote, Paying People to Lie, the Truth About the Budgeting Process, end quote. So what happened was Jensen put up his hand on pay and said, whoops, terribly sorry, I got this wrong. And my arguments back then were flawed, among other things, because managers don't always tell the truth. Now, non-technical readers might be tempted to read that and use a non-technical term, which is duh.
Well, something to do with Sherlock Holmes.
The rest of us, of course, always tell the truth.
Right. And obviously, academic economists always tell the truth. So it comes as a surprise to them that to find that other people may not. Personally, I would say it's to his credit that he put his hand up. And it's reflective of the fact that, like many very clever people, Jensen could also be quite naive in the sense that he could miss some very big picture points. So he put up his hand. He was effectively ignored.
Wonder why?
Yes, quite.
So all those young corporate executives who were thronging to Harvard Business School weren't so interested in listening to someone talking about why they shouldn't be paid the earth. Curious that.
They were not the only people who weren't interested. Interestingly, there's another eminent academic has used this as an example to point out that when Jensen came out and changed his mind, if you were a young academic, you did not have much incentive to pursue that idea because it was not going to be very popular with lots of people. So it becomes an interesting example of the academic ecosystem.
We've moved on quite a long way from fairly simple, if extremely lucrative, share options. We now have a much more sophisticated method of calculating the executive bonuses. Indeed, no major company set of accounts is complete without at least 20 pages on executive pay, because, of course, the vulgar idea that it's just the share price that matters has been overtaken by all sorts of other things, which, of course, makes the system even easier to game than it was when it was a simple question of trying to ramp up the share price.
Correct. It's also worth pointing out that private equity has an influence here as well, in the sense that whether consciously or unconsciously, implicitly or explicitly, if you are one of these very highly paid chief executives and you're talking about one of these, as Neil says, very complicated plans, which could end up with a very big number, hovering somewhere in the background is the threat that if you don't get what you want, you'll go and work for a private equity firm where you can get paid that much. And by the way, you don't have to go through all this disclosure. So what's been going on in private equity because of a fluid transfer market between private equity and public companies, it has a pretty direct influence on what's going on in quoted companies.
So we've talked a bit about Jensen's change of heart on pay. Did his change of heart extend to private equity, or did he continue to think that's marvellous stuff?
It's a fascinating question. The simple answer is he never did a mea culpa anything like as comprehensive on private equity. But it's pretty clear to me, based on at least one quote I can give you, that he didn't like what he saw happening in private equity. So as long ago as 2010, he was being interviewed by an Indian radio station. And he said, quote, "The Blackstones of the world going public, it's crazy. Having a publicly traded private equity firm is not only a non sequitur in the English language, it's also an economic non sequitur." And before you say anything, let me add another quote.
Yep.
So again, he's talking about Blackstone. "The Blackstone case was absolutely egregious. If you read the prospectus, you know there's a specific provision there saying they have no fiduciary responsibility to the stockholders. I mean, who would want to buy a piece of junk like that?"
And it's amazing how many people did.
But to go back to Jensen himself, because as you say, he goes through this recantation. I have to say, reading a little bit about what happens, I begin to feel it all got on top of him a bit. He gets involved with this very curious character. Well, he calls himself Werner Erhard, but his real name was something else entirely. It was something like John Paul Rosenberg, who was a sort of dishwasher salesman, who then became a self-improvement guru, left his wife, changed his name and lived in another state, named himself partly after Werner Heisenberg and partly after Ludwig Erhard, the German economics minister. Anyway, so they get together and they start publishing this very weird sort of philosophy, which apparently has been encapsulated in a 1,000-slide PowerPoint presentation. And so as far as I can make out, the fact that he's become so kind of woo-woo has given people who don't particularly like his recantation a chance to sort of say he's gone mad. What's going on?
The answer is, I don't know what's going on. There is, I think he had some issues in his personal life. What is certainly true is when I first started researching private equity, which was 2010, everyone used the same word when they were telling me I needed to go and read Jensen, which I had read a long time ago. But they all said, oh, you must read Jensen's work on private equity, which is, quote unquote, seminal, 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 seminal. So then I would be interviewing people in the academic world and I'd say, so what's Jensen up to nowadays? Because this stuff he's writing with Werner Erhard seems a little different from what he was doing way back then. And a slight look of pain would come across people's faces. And I forget exactly what they said. They certainly did not say what you just said, Jonathan. They found politer ways of saying, you know, he's gone off down a different track.
I'm beginning to see why he didn't get a Nobel Prize.
Well, so we're here now, and we, as we started, chief executives still have exorbitant pay. Private equity is thriving, yet Jensen's recanted. According certainly to Adrian Wooldridge in Bloomberg, wrote a piece the other day about the impact of Jensen. He said, well, if you go to Harvard Business School these days, you won't find anyone teaching shareholder value theory and all that nonsense. They're all teaching about purpose and ESG. But there's no sign that at the business end of the stock market or the private equity financial world, there's really any change. Everyone's still quite happily going along than the original old Jensen model.
Do you think there is any evidence that we've sort of reached peak private equity? after a wonderful run when money was essentially free, they're now discovering that they're actually having to pay something for this vast load of debt that they've taken on. Is this going to be something which will seriously cramp their style, cause large numbers of, if not bankruptcies, capital reconstructions? Or do you think they will just sail on regardless because the rewards for getting it right are so high?
They will certainly want to sail on regardless because, as you say, the rewards are so high. Here's a sort of piece of evidence that we're approaching peak private equity is that private equity is in the process of morphing into the thing it was supposed to replace. So private equity was hailed by Michael Jensen as a way of putting more discipline on things like RJR Nabisco. But increasingly, big private equity firms or even small private equity firms are looking increasingly like the very large conglomerates that they were supposed to replace. Meaning, if you added up all the companies which are run by Blackstone, it would look a bit like the way a famous old conglomerate called General Electric used to look. And then there are lower level, more technical differences. So part of Jensen's argument in favor of private equity was discipline. So each division had to stand on its own two feet. So head office could not subsidize losers. Increasingly, what's happening is there are structures that allow private equity firms to subsidize losers. So private equity looks ever more like what it was supposed to replace. The difference is the people running it get paid much more. So the question really comes back to not what do the private equity firms want to do. The question ultimately comes back to what do the pension funds want to do.
We started off by saying there's this sort of division on Jensen that some people say he's whatever, Gordon Gekko with a doctorate. The other people say he was an absolute necessary corrective to the sort of lazy bureaucratic management we had in the 70s. Where do you come down, Peter?
I think he was a valuable corrective. And unlike Gordon Gekko, he wasn't doing this to get rich. He genuinely believed that this was good for everyone. I give him huge credit for holding his hand up. I just think that, like many very clever people, he had tunnel vision, which meant that he was naive and he took things too far.
I think that what goes around comes around, really, and businesses, whether private or public, are run by individuals who have a series of incentives and series of things that drive them. And if you go too far down one track, then the business or the system starts to fail.
My only 2 cents worth is that a lot of large quoted companies are essentially bureaucracies, and the idea that you can run them by giving people incentives like genuinely entrepreneurial ventures where the guy in charge is at risk of losing everything is a myth. So I'm more with the older, wiser Jensen than with the younger one.
Oh, definitely. And it's to his credit that he started to see problems and tried to do something about it. The frustrating thing is the thing that made him very successful, I suspect, made it very hard for him to think more broadly in the way that he needed to.
Which is almost a sort of epitaph for a chief executive, really. That was A Long Time in Finance with Jonathan Ford and Neil Collins. Production and editing by Nick Hilton, and our sponsorship partner is briefcase.news. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review it on your podcast app, as that will help new listeners find us.